Welcome to the Stories of Anishinaabe Resilience podcast. I am your host, Robin Medicine. In this episode, I will be talking to Summer Riley, granddaughter of the late Dolores Wawye. Summer shares fond memories of her grandmother and the positive impact she had on her despite attending St. Joseph's Residential School.
My name is Summer Riley. I am from Gull Bay First Nation. My family are the Wawyes and the Naugijiks, who are from the Bear Clan.
Summer Riley is the granddaughter of the late Dolores Wawye.
All of her brothers and sisters went to residential school, including my grandmother, Dolores Wawye.
Did her siblings also attend St. Joseph's, or were they split up and sent to other residential schools?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I know that they did attend together as a group with some of them. There were 12 of them, so they could have been split up. But my grandmother wasn't always in residential school. She actually was in a hospital suffering from TB. So she was by herself in a hospital room.
Do you know if she was sent to the Indian Hospital in Sulakot? Does that sound familiar?
You know what? I'd have to ask my mom about that one. But I know it was so far away that no one could visit. So that, you know, that could be possible because that would seem like very far away to me. Yeah, she was a very good storyteller. I brought her to history class once. we were talking about residential schools in history, and my teacher, and I was kind of failing, you know, and as I went up to my teacher, I was like, you know, my grandmother will come talk about residential schools. And he's like, oh, really? And I was like, yeah. I said, she loves to educate people. She's a professor. Really? Is it Dolores? And I was like, yes. He's like, oh my God. And he looked like a kid in a candy store. This non-Indigenous history teacher. He just kind of, you know how kids kind of like, they don't know what to do with their bodies. So he just kind of like looked like a crab. He kind of like all his limbs came in and he kind of did this little jump and he was so excited. And he's like, yeah, I would love for her to come here. And so she came in, she talked for 2 hours on residential school and how it affected her family and the generations, you know, coming after her family. And you know how class is like 45 minutes long in high school? She talked for 2 hours. And none of the students moved from their seats when the bell rang. And I remember it like clear as day because it just blew my mind, right? Because I'm thinking high school students, they want to go talk to their friends. They want to go for a smoke break before the next class, you know? And my teacher just, you know, my grandma paused for a second and looked at my teacher. My teacher's like, well, those who want to stay, just stay. And those who need to go, go. But I'll let your teachers know that you stayed to listen to this. And they're like, and everybody stayed. None of them left 2 hours straight. And she told her story and all these students sat there and listened and they were just like, they just listened to her story, you know, and they were so encaptured by it that like they forgone like their smoke break or their socialization break just in order to hear a story from my grandmother. And it was like, that was like when I started to realize like what she was saying was very important because like, how can that capture the attention of students my age? I thought, you know, in my mind.
So for those who don't know who Dolores Wawye is or have never heard of her, can you speak to her character and like just kind of give us an idea of like the kind of person she was?
My grandmother is the woman that would give you the shoes off her feet. That's you call and you say, hey, Nanny, I'm ready to come home and go to school. Okay, baby, come home. But she was very, I was cleaning out her basement and I'm coming across all these old education documents that she kept from when she was Lakehead University educating herself to become a teacher. And she's writing this letter to the Indian Affairs and she's like, I need $132, like right precise for clothing. Because I need to travel to remote First Nation communities and I've been wearing the same suit for 5 days a week since I started school because she needed to dress like she would be a teacher. And so she wore that same suit every single day for 5 days a week for however many years, because it wasn't indicated anywhere in the letters. And so she's like, I've been wearing the same suit, but I would like to get two new pairs of slacks, two dress tops, you know, a new coat and a pair of shoes. And I need bus fare to go to this remote First Nations community and teach. And I was like, wow. I said, you know what we take for granted today, because I remember her telling me when she was going to school, she was paying someone to watch her kids $4 for each kid. And she said that was like what she got a month. And I was like, wow, that's so crazy, because like the equivalent of what we get today, like I feel like it was very hard way back then, you know, especially being Indigenous and just reading that, like she has to ask for $123 or $32 to get another suit so she can do her education. You know? It just seemed crazy to me. And she gave up raising her kids so she could finish her education, so she could take them away from all the trauma. She gave up being a mother so that I could have a better life. But that's the type of woman she was. She was just always giving, always caring. She always told me, you can't replace little fingers, but you can replace things.
Did her parents also attend residential school?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it was her brothers and her sisters, because they got taken away from their parents.
Did they live in Thunder Bay, or do you know where they lived before they went to residential school?
I think one of her parents were from Lake Helen. I think that's where she was before, because her mother married a Wawie from Gull Bay.
In her interview with the reporter, she was talking about her siblings and how 6 of the 9 have their masters. And she was so proud of that. I think that's amazing, considering, you know, that they had all went to residential school. At least that's my understanding.
Yeah, it's a very smart family. My uncle, he couldn't overcome the trauma and ended up on the streets for all of his life, really. My grandma never beat him in a game of Scrabble once, ever, never. He beat her every single game. I remember her getting so mad at him. And he was such a smart guy, even my mother, she couldn't overcome her trauma either. She couldn't overcome it. She hasn't been able to work her whole life because of it, but she is so smart. Like, she could bust me in a lie like you wouldn't believe, you know. And she makes the best tarts, you know, the best pancakes, you know. And but she's smart. She went to hairdressing school. She used to do really good at it, but just the anxiety overcame her and she couldn't finish it, you know. Couple that with a mother that wasn't able to raise her daughter, that now wanted to support her, you know. And it was an enabling relationship, but that, you know, they loved each other. And, you know, just, it's just how trauma goes, right? You if you can't look after it, it goes to your children. It definitely went down through the children, for sure, because I myself have had a lot of trauma. And but without her resilience, without her caring, without her understanding, you know, none of us would have been able to overcome it. Like, because of the decisions she made, I was able to break free from my trauma, right? And but that she had to endure more than trauma. She had to give stuff up in order for us to do that. But all her family, they're all smart. Like Leslie, he could have been a rocket scientist. That guy is gnarly smart. And all my aunties are all social workers. And I can only think that they'd go into that job because of the empathy they have for what they've experienced, right? I mean, I worked on the ambulance for over 8 years. And I tell you this, like, I cry a lot more than I used to, because, you know, I have that shared experience with a lot of people now. And that experience only makes you stronger, right? So, you know, she was a very strong woman. That's why she was supposed to die like 3 or 4 times. Like no kidding. Like she was on her deathbed at least 3 times, you know, from when I was younger. time took her, right? Time, and you know, she was her body was unhealthy from years of over prescribing medication.
I think last time we were talking over the phone, you and I, you were mentioning that you had also went to university. Can you share a bit about that and a bit about yourself?
Yeah, I was actually a grade 9 dropout. I think I have undiagnosed ADD. My mind is constantly racing, and it's always been racing ever since I could remember. I remember being an insomniac for many years. But like I always picked up new skills. I like my grandma always called me the jack of all trades. Like I was painting, I was drawing, I was coding, I was building video games, I was out biking all day, you know, like I was all over the place. And but I was a grade 9 dropout. You know what? I say boo-hoo, man. I retired early. I did all my traveling. I mean, it was a risky business. Like I hitchhiked across Canada. I slept under bridges, benches, you know, 6 years. I lived on the streets. I tested any drug I could find. I mean, like when you live on the streets and you're sleeping at minus 20 weather, sometimes it's best not to feel it, right? I mean, not that it's right, but like coping, there's a funny thing with that. But 6 years I was on the streets, and it's all come kind of full circle now that I'm in my 30s, my mid 30s, and I'm kind of where I want to be in life. Back then, it didn't seem that way. I was like, I hate the world. Why does everyone, you know, get everything handed to them? And I got to work 5 times, 10 times, 100 times harder to even get a quarter from somebody to phone somebody. Anyways, that's a whole other story. But like, I was like the poor me, you know, person. I hit rock bottom. I went and called my grandmother crying. I was 18. I called her crying my eyeballs out. And I just hit rock bottom. I don't know if you've been there, but I've been there. And you know when you hit rock bottom, like you know when you've hit absolute rock bottom. And I called her and I was like, Nanny, I need to come home. I'm ready to go back to school. And so I came back, I did my upgrading, but because my grandmother had patience and understanding, and she just wanted me to succeed, I blew through it. You know, like you make all these changes in your life, and I'm happy where I am right now. I'm a community wellness training coordinator for 49 First Nation communities. And I couldn't be happier because I know what it's like to be where some of those people are and how they're feeling, that I know a portion of the steps that they need in order to become successful when dealing with crisis, right? Because I've experienced it. I have all that extra empathy and all that extra training, and I have the passion to want to help people. And I know where I got that passion from. I got that from my grandmother. She was, like I said, she'd give you the shoes off her feet. She definitely made me the person I am today. I couldn't really be here without her. I am a foster parent now. That was, you know, she put our kids up, or her kids up into foster care, my mom and my 2 uncles. And they were in foster care, and we're part of a big foster family, over 200 of us that still gather every 2 years for Christmas. And it's a huge family. It's very nice how she set up our life. You know, we're well connected here in Thunder Bay with family that are both Indigenous and non-Indigenous. We have a strong relationship with a lot of family members still, because they used to visit each other constantly. And so like without that family connection, we wouldn't be as strong as we are today. I wouldn't have been exposed to fostering, you know, without my grandmother. And today I wouldn't be fostering 3 beautiful, awesome, intelligent children. And then looking after my cousin as well. Like he calls me mom. I've had him since he was 3 and a half, and my grandmother full-heartedly supported that, that I raise him as well. So without her, I wouldn't have had my son. She definitely was the matriarch of the family for sure. Without her, I think a lot of us are feeling lost right now. We haven't been able to grieve her. You know, like no one can step up right now because everyone's still hasn't grieved. I feel like the matriarch system, it was very important in our family because before my grandmother, it was Galal. And I mean, it's always really been my grandma in a sense because she's the eldest, but she always looked to her elders too, right? She always sought advice from people that she considered elders in the community. And so, you know, it really does, I think, boil down to the matriarch system. And right now we're kind of at a loss because we can't really gather, right? And so we can't kind of make it that distinguishment amongst our family right now. So a lot of us aren't talking. And right now I have people ask me, when is her celebration of life going to happen? And I said, well, you know, I want to do something special for her. Like, I want to rent the hall at Fort William First Nation and request people bring backpacks full of school supplies, because that was one goal of hers. She had was that she was going to do like another little party for the Gull Bay community and have her friends and colleagues bring backpacks for the students and books. And so that, you know, like that's something that I want to do. And I just can't, you know, throw something together with 10 people and do that, right? I want to wait till everything's open where we can all just gather. Because I know she knew a lot of people and I just don't want to limit it, right? I want to be able to share.
On May 30th, 2020, Dolores passed away suddenly in Thunder Bay during the early planning stages of the Stories of Anishinaabe Resilience Project. Dolores was at the top of our list of St. Joseph's Residential School survivors to interview for this podcast. She was a trailblazer and longtime advocate for Indigenous education and received many honors and rewards for her work.
I've moved forward, and I think that we can all move forward. We just need to help those that are down there. Some people think, oh, poor me, poor me. No, just look to others that are poor and go and help them, help others. So I've done that all my life.